everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kerry McIntosh, joined as always by Sondra. Hi, Sondra, how are you?
Hi, Kenny. I'm very, very tired, but I'm here, and that's okay. How are you?
I'm good. We are here to talk Retro Raw, episode 325, on the journey of Retro Raw. This is the August 16th, 1999 episode. Before we start, we're getting very close to the debut of SmackDown, so people will probably wonder what we're doing. So there is news. So all the details will be released next week. But basically what's happening is Sondra and I will be doing a Raw and SmackDown retro show. And it will be moving to Patreon. That is the plan. And obviously initially people might be like, well, why is it moving? And all that kind of stuff. But the reality is to watch another two-hour show and cover it and analyse it and review it takes more time, takes more stuff. And it's going to have to move over to Patreon. But the show is going to be longer, obviously, because we're doing two shows in one. And Finn, instead of doing Retro Heat, is now going to move on to the pay-per-view reviews with Sondra and I every month, starting next week with SummerSlam. So we're going to be keeping Retro going, but we figured Sondra can't really watch one, not the other. Same with Finn. So it had to be, something had to give. So you're going to be watching Raw and SmackDown every week. From Retro,
I am going to be watching Raw and SmackDown every week, and I am glad that this change is happening when I'm, you know, for the most part enjoying WWF programming in the year of our Lord 1999. Because like, if SmackDown would have come around at this time last year, I probably would have just been like, nah, I don't really know how I feel about that. But no, it's good. I'm actually excited about it because I've been enjoying Retro quite a bit, and you know, the coming of SmackDown is always one of those things people talk about. Like, I'm intrigued. It means a lot more. It means more watching wrestling, which is, I mean, my life is already watching wrestling, I swear. So,
well, look, now you only have a two-hour SmackDown to add to your list, and a two-hour NXT on Wednesday nights, and a two-hour AEW. So, you know, it's only six more hours a week.
I'm glad my oven works so I can stick my head in it at some point in time. It's like, wrestling's my favorite thing, though, right? Like, I love wrestling. Wrestling's the best thing ever. It's just, there's so much of it. And I'm like, I'm behind on stuff I want to watch. Like, I'm behind on Chikara. I need to make time for that. But it's okay.
Yeah, so, and you know, the whole thing is, we were debating for a while, what do we do? How do we do it? And so basically, now in the free feed, there's going to be Inside the Ropes and PowerSlam Podcast and a monthly interview cast. Because I was trying to think, like, I just can't do interview cast every week. I've got too much other stuff on. So it'll be once a month where I'll have somebody on and I'll do a long-form interview. You have the other two main podcasts, and then Retro is now going to be a bonus on Patreon. Because we found out, I mean, not everybody has time to listen to, like, three of our main feed podcasts. And because you only have so much time in the world. So it'll be moving over to Patreon. All the information will be up there. There's going to be more stuff coming to Patreon as well. There's going to be different levels coming up. And that's all going to kick off at the end of the month. So next week we will be able to tell you all the stuff that you're able to get for each level and blah, 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 blah. So hopefully
there's basically a restructuring afoot.
There is a restructuring afoot, but it's not. I don't think it's a bad restructuring.
No, I think it's a good restructuring.
And, you know, the more that you pay, the more that you get. And if, you know, if you still want to give us a thank you, then that's fine too. And if you just support us here in the free feed, of course, that's great too. Because not everybody has money to do a pledge. But if you do pledge to us, we appreciate it. And I think we do give away the most stuff on a Patreon of anyone that I've seen.
Like, by far. Like, by far, we give away the most stuff on our Patreon that anyone I've ever seen.
Yeah, so that is going to continue. And hopefully you will check us out over there if you've not given us a shot already. So this is the go-home show for SummerSlam, and this is a show.
It is definitely a show. Things happen. Things occur on this program.
Is it a more bonkers episode than you were expecting, or is it just what you were expecting, or did it underwhelm you in terms of the bonkers?
I mean, it was bonkers. I expected it to be bonkers. It drove Mr. Sondra up a wall because he was like, why is the number one contendership changing like so many times on one program when it's the go home show? So yeah, like, I mean, I guess the level of bonkers doesn't faze me as much as it would have like before I started this Retro Raw journey. but I was just kind of like, 1999, folks, like, this is what happens. These are the kinds of things we have. It's crazy.
So
and some of the bonkersness I liked, like it never got boring.
No, this show was anything but boring.
Yes, it was anything but boring. Like I do take issue with some things on the program.
Has umbrage
but, you
been
know,
taken?
A bit of umbrage,
okay,
perhaps.
Well,
yeah,
we shall get umbrage. I mean, we should mention, obviously, if anybody who's listening to this, you've watched the show. So we end the show with the kind of who is the number one contender? Is it Mankind? Is it Triple H? And obviously, at this point, there wasn't a SmackDown, so it was only in the weekend programming or the website, if you somehow had the internet in August of 99, which not a lot of people did, that you found out that Linda McMahon makes it a triple threat. Because she says,
oh, really?
In a weekend interview, she was like, you know, Vince can't be here. Vince isn't allowed to get involved. So I have no choice but to make it a triple threat match with Austin, Mankind, and Triple H at SummerSlam. But you had to be watching the weekend shows like Livewire or Superstars or Shotgun to find that out. So that is the way that it is. The real story here is that Austin has a knee injury. He'd been out of action since July 27th with it. I think he had a badly bruised shin, and then he also took a bump after a Raw tape where he was supposed to go through the announcer's table, but he didn't land, or the table didn't break, he didn't land right. So yeah, he's had quite a bad tear on his TCL. Yeah, so he's got a torn TCL and a badly bruised shin, but he was basically kept off wrestling until SummerSlam so he could wrestle SummerSlam. This is the case, and also he wasn't crazy at the idea of facing Triple H in a one-on-one match because he didn't deem him to be WWF title material.
So he did not deem Triple H to be a worthy opponent.
Yes, which, like...
I mean, I also do not deem Triple H to be a worthy opponent, so Steve Austin and I agree.
Well,
but...
I mean, I think that's a bullshit thing.
I know. I just don't like him.
But that's fine. You can not like him, but still think what Austin's doing is bullshit, you know? Like,
I think it is bullshit. Like, Austin, shouldn't his job be to elevate Triple H and make him feel like a worthy opponent? Like, taking my distaste for Triple H aside, like, Austin's job in this scenario should be to try to elevate Triple H and make him feel like a worthy opponent. Like, you know, Becky Lynch's job a while back was to try and make Lacey Evans feel like a worthy opponent. She was not a worthy opponent. She should not have been in title contention. But, you know, Becky didn't throw a straw up and be like, no, I will not face her.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing with Austin, I can almost understand the Billy Gunn and Jeff Jarrett thing because they were not, I mean, they did not feel like contenders. And, you know, that was fine. That was Austin's thing. He didn't really want to face, like, people who were not on the level of him being in a match with. And that's fine.
He did not want a Patriot situation.
And that's fine. Look, I get that. But with Triple H, it's like, they've put a lot of effort into trying to elevate Triple H, whether he is liked or not. And they've done a pretty good job with it. So for him to SummerSlam... have a problem having a match. But this is, like, I mean, this is peak Austin paranoia because he's injured, he's hurting.
And that's going to make him more afraid of losing his spot, I'm sure.
Yeah. And you've also got The Rock, who is super popular, which I'm sure didn't help.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, he's obviously...
Because that's something I don't hear a lot of people talk about. I hear a lot of people talk about... Austin and The Rock being at the peak of their popularity at the same time, but I don't ever really hear people saying, like, Austin had a problem specifically with The Rock. Like, I always hear Austin, you know, holding other people down or not wanting to work with certain people or, you know, that sort of thing. But that's one of the things that I don't think gets brought up in the conversation about Austin's paranoia is, like, also The Rock is there, and it just seems like kind of a big glaring thing.
Yeah, exactly. Where did you get The Rock who, like, takes the Billy Gunn thing, even though there's nothing there, and, like, you know, as he should, just gets himself over. You know, he's like, if you want me to beat somebody, and that's what your plan is, then that's fine, I'll just use the time to elevate myself.
It's the Rock-Billy Gunn thing is interesting. I mean, we can get into it more later, but, like, I've always heard that The Rock versus Billy Gunn is how not to get someone over, right? Like, in terms of Billy Gunn. Mm-hmm. And that's true. But as we're watching through Retro Raw, like, Billy Gunn's character development in this episode goes from I have a butt to I have a butt and it itches. So,
Yeah, it's not one of those scenarios where like Billy Gunn was really elevated and super hot and then he went into a program with The Rock and he got killed. It was like he was not pushed well and not pushed well, then he faced The Rock and continued to not be pushed well.
and like the entire story behind him is just terrible. Like, I mean, that is the story. He has a butt and now it itches. Like, that's it. And I don't know why that makes me want to see him face The Rock at SummerSlam. Like, it doesn't really. So I think the Billy Gunn issue, like, yes, The Rock did not help elevate Billy Gunn in this feud. He certainly did not. But like, nothing is helping to elevate Billy Gunn at this point. And like, Billy Gunn as a performer, it's like, why are you doing this? Like, this is terrible.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. Meltzer did say in the Observer this week, he talked about the Billy Gunn and Jeff Jarrett situations, and here was, so the story, excuse me, apparently was that Austin was supposed to wrestle Billy Gunn in a non-title match on the Raw after Fully Loaded, but Austin got to TV and felt there was no storyline reason as to why he should face Billy Gunn in a cold match, and nobody could give him a good enough storyline reason otherwise to change his mind. Maybe because it's your job?
Yeah, I mean, like, people faced each other in non-title matches all the time.
He said he thought it
And
would
he
be.
was just the king of the ring, too, so it's not like he's nobody.
Yeah, see, Austin had said apparently he thought it would be better a better use of himself to just cut a promo to do that type of angle, saying that he was tired and beaten up from Fully Loaded. He didn't rule out working with Gunn if there was a storyline reason, and there are tentative plans at some point before the year is out for Austin to have a pay-per-view match against Billy Gunn. That does not happen because look how they're pushing him.
He has a butt and it itches.
And with the Jarrett thing, Meltzer said that Austin did nix a planned program with Jarrett, with Austin believing Jarrett isn't over enough to where it would make sense for a guy in his position to work with him.
I wonder why he's not over enough. Oh, because you keep stunnering him into oblivion after he wins and retains the Intercontinental Championship? Could that be why?
So they also go on to mention that, you know, the animosity that we've talked about before, where Jarrett had cut the promo criticizing the Austin 316 thing, which was taken seriously, and he apparently was told he doesn't want to work with. He doesn't want to be the person who picks Jarrett to a level he hasn't been able to attain. So there's a whole thing. And then also you've got the fact that Austin is together with Deborah in real life,
Right.
and he didn't want a wrestling angle to interfere with his real life and didn't want to be in a position of having to hang around in places with Deborah because the two would be feuding on TV. So there's a lot going on.
There is a lot going on. Like, honestly, if he was like, I don't want to work a program against my wife or his girlfriend or whatever their relationship is at this point, like, still, I would say it is your job to do so, but that's more of a reason than like, I don't like this guy. He cut a promo on me 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's very strange. I mean, it's very strange. Like, I know this is very different, right? But I, like, for example, somebody came back into my life this week who I did not want back in my life, and I'm not friends with, and I have no desire to ever be friends with because of things that they have done to me or said about me, and the person wanted to come to one of the shows this week for a reason which I won't go into, and I just went, "That's," and I just said, "That's fine, no problem." Because I understand that if you are trying to do something in wrestling that I am now doing, and I've kind of made it to do it, and you haven't, that's enough punishment. I know how bad
Right.
I know how bad I would feel in that scenario. So while I have no interest in the person humanly in any way, I'm not going to like do any more than that. So like, if Steve Austin is the WWF champion, he is the best of the best, the biggest star going. He's making $5 to $6 million a year. Have a fucking match with Jeff Jarrett and get over it.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, like, one match. And the thing is, it's not like Austin was being asked to like lose to Jeff Jarrett, right? He's not being asked to, you know, like put Jeff Jarrett over or like lose the WWF title to Jeff Jarrett. Like, having a match is not the end of the world. And if he's to the level of paranoia where like having a match with someone he feels diminishes his credibility, then like that's going a bit overboard, I feel.
Yeah, I would agree. Plus, maybe I'm wrong here. Like, I really, really don't think that Jeff Jarrett was like not over enough. Like, I'm not saying he was a main eventer. I'm not trying to say, oh, Jeff Jarrett, but Jeff Jarrett was over. Like, the act of Jeff Jarrett and Deborah was over. They were more over than Billy Gunn is.
Yeah,
Anyway.
you're not wrong. And he was the Intercontinental Champion. Like, he was a champion in the company. So it's not like he was a nobody. And he, like, him being made to feel like kind of a nobody by Austin, like, diminished Jeff Jarrett, but it also diminished the title, which is frustrating.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so let's get into the episode. So Triple H comes out at the beginning of the show. He wants to bring out the number one contender. The focus should be where it belongs. Here comes China. He brings her out. He tells her, you know, he wants her to bask in the glory. He's happy to be with her. He wants to think of all they've been through. And, you know, he tells some stories and she's kind of walking down memory lane with him. Remember when you qualified for the Rumble? Remember you qualified for King of the Ring? You know, I've never asked you for anything until now. He says what he wants is what he busted his ass for. He wants to slot back and he wants a match with her and the winner will face Austin. China says she needs to think about it and she said no. And then he basically turns on his niceness to her and said he made her ass and without him she would be nothing. He could break her. He calls her an ungrateful bitch. And now he's telling her that he's taken back his number one contender. She then agrees to the match and says that he doesn't have the balls to face her. Pretty interesting opening segment. What did you make of this?
I mean, I didn't like this because I want China to be the number one contender. This whole episode is kind of an exercise in frustration for China fans, right? Because China at this point, like, she's made to seem like the babyface against Triple H, right? Like, last week he's like, you're just a woman and you can't do anything. And she's like, fuck you. And so I appreciate China's plight here, right? And she's become number one contender, not necessarily like legitimately. She was helped to become number one contender, but she's number one contender. So when Triple H is just like, I mean, I just want a match so I can, you know, have that number one contendership back, why would she say yes? Of course she should say no to him because like he's being an asshole, right? So yeah, like that was just kind of frustrating. And then for her to finally agree, like I didn't even catch the part where she agreed when I was watching the program originally. And then I was like, why is she even having this match with Triple H? Like, I know he goaded her, but if he's being a dick to her, like you'd think that would make her less likely to agree to a match, right? Like, okay, so you're going to ask me for a match. I'm going to tell you no, because I want to be number one contender because I want to be champion. And then you're a dick to me. So now I'm going to say, yes, that's fine. I will put my number one contendership on the line. Like I wouldn't do it. So that was kind of frustrating, mostly because I just don't like Triple H. But I mean, it does make for an interesting story.
Well, yeah, because I mean, I thought, I mean, first of all, China should not be in a World Wrestling Federation Championship match at all, in any way, shape, or form. Would be the worst
as
idea
a,
ever.
As a wrestler, no. As a character, I'm like, fuck yes, give me China.
Yeah, yeah, but and I like the story of it. Like, I thought the story was, and it's funny, like, you were saying Mr. Saunders, like, why all this stuff? And I'm like, to me, like, you don't do it all the time, right? Of course. But, like, if the TV's hot enough that, like, people are just going to buy SummerSlam anyway and you can keep stories going on TV, like, this go-home show was very, like, you needed to watch it. You couldn't miss this go-home show. If you had missed this go-home show and then, like, turned on SummerSlam and been like, oh, what?
Why is it, like, Mankind is back? Like, what?
Yeah, like, so whereas, like, we talk sometimes about how, like, you want a reason to have to watch. Like, you want a reason to have to, and I think Mankind, Triple H, and Austin is a good hook for people because then you've got Mankind back, the beloved babyface. You've got Austin, the beloved champion. You've got Triple H, the dastardly heel. I thought the opening segment was really good. I liked how he was playing the games of trying to suck up to her and she just wasn't having it. And then he turns on her and she ends up taking the match anyway. So I thought it was a good hook for the show.
A good hook for the show, but I mean, like, she knows him well enough to know he's full of shit.
Yeah, but then she probably also knows that, like, she doesn't want to win it that way. Like, she doesn't want to, you know, because it's not like she beat him fair and square. She beat him because Austin smashed him with a chair. And
right.
She probably helped with the cinder block thing. Like, I don't think we've talked about that, but she probably did help.
Most likely she did.
Most likely. I mean, I would imagine that China was the one who went shopping for the cinder block.
Of course. She's the logistics person.
She is. She's the brains behind the operation. So, Austin arrives backstage. Chris Jericho has now arrived, so he's here. I miss when people used to arrive, Sandra.
It is fun when people arrive. I mean, like, there is that thing of, like, why are you so late to your job? But I like when people arrive. It makes it feel big.
Arriving is good. I did mean to say, so obviously there was heat the night before, the last one that we covered on our timeline on Patreon. I won't go through the whole thing, but basically the gist of it was the Undertaker beat X-Pac in the main event quite easily. Meat got a win over Jeff Jarrett because Terry hadn't sexed him before the match, so he was actually able to wrestle, and then Deborah's interference backfired. Big Show faced Kane, but Hardcore Holly came out. Hardcore Holly ended up getting Big Show's face, which got him a choke slam, and they seem to be split up now. The Blue Meanie is an atrocious professional wrestler because he faced Al Snow. But it did get the debut of Stevie Richards, who debuted to help the Blue Meanie by Stevie kicking Al Snow. Gangrel and the Hardy Boys beat up Edge and Christian when they were facing Papi Chulo and Funaki. And Chyna had a number one contenders interview where she said that she would basically rip off Steve Austin's scrotum and stomp on them to win the title.
That sounds painful.
It does. As someone who owns a scrotum, I can tell you. Sounds painful.
I mean, I don't even own one and it sounds not pleasant to me.
Road Dogg comes out for a match with Al Snow. Al's got Pepper with him. Al Snow hands Pepper to Jerry Lawler. So then we get this match with Al Snow and Road Dogg. It's okay. It's fine. Nothing special. But then the referee ends up getting knocked out. Big Boss Man runs down, hits Al Snow with a nightstick a couple times. Road Dogg gets the win. So we're still furthering this whole Al Snow, Big Boss Man thing. Any thoughts on this match?
Pepper peed on Jerry Lawler, which was funny. I laughed about that.
Pepper shenanigans are great.
Pepper shenanigans are great. I mean, Jerry Lawler's like, because Road Dogg, you know, is going to kick this shiznit doggy style, as he is wont to do. He wants to fuck this shiznit in the ass. Or not in the ass, but like from behind. So Jerry Lawler has a line in commentary here. He's like, you know, I don't really like dogs, just puppies. And I'm like, fuck off. He's like, the only puppies I like have two legs. And I'm like, you literally think women are a pair of tits. Like, that is all you see them as. I do not like you. Jerry Lawler is just egregious and I cannot handle it. I don't have many thoughts on the match itself because, you know, it was Al Snow versus the Road Dogg and it was not very exciting. But it's fine. Like, it's mostly just about the Pepper shenanigans and the Big Boss Man coming in at the end and, you know, costing Al Snow the match because the Big Boss Man is a dastardly, dastardly baddie.
That's pretty much all there is. So we have that opening match. That's fine. Undertaker and Big Show are backstage, just rocking it. And then we get a makeup artist talking to Jericho. Jericho wants his hair fixed, saying he has...
he doesn't want his hair fixed. She goes, do you want me to fix that for you? And he's like, this hair is the most amazing. It's the most popular style in Europe. It is the best.
Yeah, he is very, like... He is very, very, like, Euro-disco. Like, he's like... If Alex Wright in WCW had, like, really went for it with his hair, he would have what Jericho has. So Jericho says he's the most popular hair. Chyna and Triple H are preparing separately for their match. And up next is one of my favourite things. The Undertaker and the Big Show.
Yes! I've been waiting for this promo. I have been waiting for it because I knew about this promo and it makes no sense.
I told you there was a promo coming up. And oh, was there a promo coming up?
I'm so happy it was this one.
I'm not even going to do it. I'm just going to let you tell it. Explain to people what The Undertaker had to say when he had The Big Show with him.
Okay, so I do not have the exact verbiage in front of me, but The Undertaker decides to tell us a tale.
Wait a minute, I'll tell you the rough kind of summary that I've got, and then you get into any parts of it. So basically, Undertaker tells the crowd to shut up. He says that later tonight is a tag title match. It doesn't matter. The winner of that match is going to face them at the pay-per-view. Then he talks about Big Show and him down Death Valley riding bikes, and they were going to the middle of the desert, and Show's bike runs out of gas. Undertaker...
It's not that it runs out of gas, Kenny. No. It's not that it runs out of gas of its own volition.
Well, no.
No.
This is deliberate.
Because The Undertaker instructed Paul Bearer to give the Big Show a motorcycle with only enough gas to get to the middle of the desert and not back. Because The Undertaker weaves this tale on this episode of, like, I don't know what this is supposed to accomplish. Like, I think it's supposed to be, like, this is why Big Show and I are pals. Like, I think that's the point of the promo. I'm pretty sure. Because, like, I think he starts it off with, like, why are you guys together? Or, like, how can he trust you? Or something like that. And so he tells this tale about how he tried to murder the Big Show by going on a bike ride with him to the middle of the desert, but Paul Bearer only put enough gas in the Big Show's motorcycle to get to the middle of the desert. And then, so the Big Show's motorcycle runs out of gas. The Undertaker, of course, like, his motorcycle's full up. So he just takes off and leaves the Big Show in the middle of the desert at night. And the Big Show, like, kills and eats things or something. I mean, he makes a snakeskin tie and lizard boots at one point, which, like, I have so many questions. Like, if you're killing animals to try and get back from the desert, and like you're carrying your motorcycle on your back because you're that much of a monster, like, why make a tie? What purpose does that serve?
It's not clever. It's not clever.
Like,
But
I just, it doesn't make any sense.
so he Undertaker has instructed the gas to run out. So Show's bike runs out of gas. Undertaker asks him how he's going to survive, and Big Show told him that he was going to kill him in his sleep and eat him. So then
Yep. That was a threat. So that's why the Undertaker takes off, because he's like, would not like to be murdered tonight, thank you.
And then 2 days later, Big Show shows up with his Harley Davidson on his shoulder. The point
Yep.
of the story, Undertaker says, is that SummerSlam will now be known as Armageddon and someone will get hurt. What?
What?
Like,
I don't understand. I don't understand. And is this some sort of like our friendship has been forged in the fire of the desert with snakes and lizards and things? Like, you know, that's how most tag teams get to know each other real well, right? Like, okay, I'm gonna go to the desert and I'm gonna try to murder you by not giving you a motorcycle that has enough gas, but then you're gonna threaten to kill and eat me in my sleep. So I'm gonna take off and hope that you die of exposure instead. But when you don't die of exposure, make a snakeskin tie and lizard boots to wear for reasons, question mark. Like, did the Undertaker steal the Big Show's clothing? Why did he need to make more of it? The Big Show has like proven that he can withstand the elements, so the Undertaker's like, we're cool now? Question mark. And now let's go eat Kane and X-Pac
I
for
mean,
reasons.
I love this so much.
Just
Like I love Undertaker's like, right, the way I'm gonna prepare Big Show for our title match is to take us to a desert, have his bike run out of gas, leave him. And Undertaker was impressed that Big Show thought about killing him in his sleep and eating him. This impressed the Undertaker. He
Yeah, it
left,
was
but it impressed him.
he just seemed like that was, you know, what he needed from the Big Show, because he needed the Big Show to show some moxie or something. Like, none of this makes any sense. I do love it. Like, I do love it. But it makes no fucking sense. And like, one of my favorite things is the Big Show's reactions in the background, because he just looks bored by most of the tale, which, I mean, you know. Like, the Undertaker is not the most interesting of speakers, and he does go on a bit. So it's understandable. But there's one point where I think maybe it's when he's talking about like the Big Show carrying the motorcycle on his back or something. Like, there's some part of the story where Big Show just kind of smiles, like, yeah, I did that. And then goes back to looking bored. Like, you'd think he'd be like, yeah, fuck yeah, I killed animals and I carried a motorcycle on my back and it was great and I totally earned your. The Big Show's just like, nah.
It's one of my favorite things. I can't express how much I love it. But then, as he's telling this story, the lights go out, the countdown's on, it's Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho comes out, the Undertaker looks disgusted at the presence of Chris Jericho.
Yep. Like, he's just some sort of little flea that's annoying them or whatever.
He comes out and said that no one cared what they had to say, he had to come out and save this segment because they're so stupid. They're not the personification of evil, but the personification of boredom. He is stunned to get so much airtime, and they turn the channel, but no longer because they now have him, and he's a hero, and he's here to save the WWF. Long live Roz Jericho, the entire organization, including the two idiots in the ring, will never ever be the same again. Undertaker says he doesn't know who he is or who he thinks he is, but if he ever interrupts them again, it'll be his last time, and that's a promise. And Jericho looks a bit worried and leaves. It is worth mentioning there was a little bit of heat backstage about this segment, only because I think the idea is if you're new to like WWF, you kind of go over what you're going to say with veterans, and I don't think that Undertaker was told that he was going to be called the personification of boredom, and he was not pleased about that line.
Do you think the issue is that Jericho is not entirely incorrect?
Oh, 100%. But I think it's more just like, I mean, because Jericho actually, I think he talks about it in his book, where he talks about, at the beginning, there's a couple of things that just didn't quite go
Yeah.
right, and this is one of them. I don't think it's like that this stopped his push, but I think it was just like one of many things that happened at the beginning. But I love the promo. I thought Jericho coming out just felt really fresh and new. So, and it's funny to me that, like, even
it
though...
made a lot more sense than Big Show crafting animal skin clothing in the desert.
Well, the thing that I find funny is that Big Show was in the main event scene immediately for like a month, and Jericho's not in the main event scene, and he's far more entertaining than the Big Show.
Oh, he like 100% outclassed both the Big Show and the Undertaker here. Like, Jericho was so much more interesting, and he's a prick. Like, you can tell that he's a heel. That's one of the things that surprised me, was Jericho is obviously not a babyface, right? Like, he is a dick. And he's interrupting the Undertaker and the Big Show, who are horrible people. Like, they're such horrible people that they just tried to murder each other and their tag team partners. So it's just a whole bunch of heels. Like, I mean, 1999 is basically a show of heels. Right? Like, and Mick Foley. So, yeah. Like, it's kind of baffling in that way. But Jericho was far more entertaining than either The Undertaker or The Big Show. I mean, like, the only reason this Undertaker promo was entertaining is because you just kind of look at it and you go, what? Like, what are you actually saying? Like, who came up with this and thought it was a good idea? Was that, like, an Undertaker scripted promo?
I want to meet that person and have a beer with them. To be honest.
Was this Vince Russo? Like, I really want to know who wrote this promo, because it's so out of nowhere. Like, and it's kind of the foreshadowing of Biker Taker, right? Like, hey, I'm on a motorcycle. I just have so many questions. Like, I wish that they would make that into like a short film. I want to see The Undertaker and Big Show going to the desert. Like, that's something they can do for their shitty animated things on the network.
Okay, so say, for example, you had a chance to either see a 1 hour film of this happening, right? Or a 5 minute fashion show with Ahmed Johnson and Mike Tyson.
Fashion show.
Really? All kinds of silly, Sandra.
It's Ahmed Johnson and Mike Tyson in a
for
fashion
five
show,
minutes.
Kenny.
5 minutes. An hour of,
I,
like,
could watch it over and over and over.
Paul Bearer trying to unload gas from a motorcycle.
I mean, it's, I didn't say that it was like, I would definitely want to watch that hour film, 100%.
The Big Show running across state borders with a Harley Davidson on his shoulder.
Well, I don't know if he ran. He can barely run to the ring.
Up next, though, we have Triple H and China. Their match is up next. We see them kind of walking towards that part of the ring. And then backstage, we have Chris Jericho telling Howard Finkel why he is here, and he's here to save everyone's jobs. And Howard Finkel, being a little snitch that he is very happy with this.
Yeah, why is Howard Finkel such a, like, weaselly character now? I just want to like Howard Finkel. He's so jovial.
I'm saying nothing. Up next, we have Triple H versus China for the number one contendership to the WWF Championship. The match is okay. I mean, Triple H, again, is obviously going to be the one that works with her because they're together and stuff. So he's going to give her a lot more than, I guess, if she'd been stuck in there with just anybody. Because at this point, I guess if a guy was having to work with China, it's a lot of people were intimidated about it. I mean, like, Road Dogg was really good with her because, again, they were in DX together, so they were pals.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like a lot of wrestlers maybe weren't comfortable with it because they just didn't know what to do. They maybe at that point saw selling for a woman as weak because it hadn't been done before. But Triple H obviously was not going to be like that with her. So they have their match, and Triple H ends up getting backdropped to the floor. At this point, Mankind just runs, well, walks fastly down from the ramp and decks Triple H, nails him to the steel steps, and then China pins Triple H. Mankind runs after Triple H with a chair and he tries to escape. Mankind has a mic and says, and tells China that they have sexual tension. He talks about their outfits. He wants a match tonight. She hits him in the nuts and says no. Then Shawn Michaels comes out because he's here to commission, and he said he doesn't want to piss it off because every man who does gets beat up. But he has a soft spot for Mankind, so therefore she is going to face Mankind for the number one contendership tonight. She is not pleased. A lot of stuff happened here, Sandra. Talk me through your various thoughts.
Yeah, there is so much going on here. Triple H and China actually had like a pretty decent match, I thought. Like, this is the compliment I'll give to Triple H. Like, you can see that he is kind of leading her through it. And because I'm so emotionally invested in China as a character, like, I really wanted her to triumph here. And the fact that she did was great. But like, Mankind coming out was just like a swerve out of left field. Like, why is, I guess Mankind wants the number one contendership, but why does Mankind think that she's just going to grant him a number one contendership match? Nor should she. Like, she just wrestled and now she has to defend her number one contendership again. Like, this seems like a hit on China. Like, why is Mick Foley doing this? Like, why can't he show up and get a number one contendership match and, you know, not have to like steal it from China? I was kind of annoyed about that.
Obviously, storyline wise, it does make sense because Triple H and China are the ones who took him out when he was injured.
So, that's true.
Continuity.
So yeah, I can grant that. That's fine. But like, why does Shawn Michaels come out and just like make a number one contendership match? It makes Shawn Michaels seem like a dick. Like, I feel like Shawn Michaels, the commissioner, is a character that I've really enjoyed because he's like kind of provided checks and balances and stuff. But every time he commissions and a woman is involved, it's horrible. Like, it's atrocious. Like, I didn't want him to make a number one contendership match for Mick Foley and China here. I wanted China to be the number one contender because I love China. So,
but I don't think this one, I don't think this one was specifically because she was a woman. I think it was because she's a heel. She's always done all the dastardly
stuff. But the language he uses in this promo is very upsetting and patronizing.
Oh, no, like, his language is bad. But like,
he's calling her sweetheart and he's calling her baby doll and he's calling her like, I don't know. He might as well be like, hey, Sugar Tits, get your ass in the ring and lose your number one contendership. Like,
live for Sugar Tits being on one line on one show at some point in life.
But it's really frustrating. Like, the way that he's speaking to her sounds patronizing. Like, he's basically talking down to her. And so even if he's not making the match because she's a woman, like, the language he's using around her makes it seem like he is, and she's not being treated like a number one contender. And if the story were, like, the thing that makes me want to bang my head against a wall, like, we agree that China's not great in the ring. If the story is, you are not a trained wrestler, that is why we don't think that you belong in number one contendership matches, or why you shouldn't be doing these things, or like, you're not ready to be in the ring, that's fine. But it's always, but she's a girl. And that entire story rubs me the wrong way and I don't like it. Shawn Michaels should just never be allowed to commission women, is my takeaway from this.
Remember
last time he commissioned women and like just awarded the loser of a match a title?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, at that point, they had to like come up with a way to get the belt off Sable when she wouldn't wrestle. So they then decided to have Shawn Michaels do what he did. So it's not cool.
And why couldn't they just have had like Deborah win?
What?
And rip the dress off.
Because Sable didn't agree to that.
Sable
didn't agree to anything, which was part of the problem. but you know, this was kind of your typical babyface authority figure does something against the dastardly heel,
problem is here, China has not been presented as the dastardly heel for this entire episode or the one before it. Like, when you have heel versus heel, which Triple H versus China is technically heel versus heel, one of them is going to seem more babyface. And to me, the one who seems more babyface is not the one who's like, you're just a woman and you can't do anything. It's the one who's like, fuck you, I'm going to prove myself. Like, China feels like an underdog babyface throughout this episode. For Mick Foley to come and like challenge her just makes Mick Foley less likable.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. So China, I mean, were you not happy to see Mankind back at least?
I was happy to see him back, but it was soured by the context of everything else that was going on.
Oh, that's a shame. Okay, well, anyway, so Mankind's back. He's facing China. Then we had Test versus Steve Blackman. They have a match, but Shane McMahon ends up coming down, taunting Test. Test attacks him, but gets hit by a kendo stick. Then Shamrock runs in. He's taking out Blackman, but then he's hit with a kendo stick. So Shamrock tries to take down Shane. Blackman again uses the kendo stick, so Shane uses it on Test. So Test and Shamrock are both laid out by Shane and Blackman. Shane McMahon with Steve Blackman. Now, he might have been an effective henchman here. He's still the most boring man alive. Any thoughts on that?
I think he was a fairly effective henchman, though. It was fine. I continue to marvel that his face doesn't change even when he's doing drop toe holds and drop kicks. Like, he's an enigma.
He's the worst of all time. it's all building towards Test and Shane at SummerSlam, which was made official on Heat, and also Steve Blackman and Ken Shamrock at SummerSlam. Michael Cole's with Austin. Austin calls him a dumb son of a bitch for stating the obvious, because Cole's trying to, you know, be a journalist, which he should know better with Steve Austin. That's probably not the way to go. He says payback is going to happen. He doesn't care who he faces at the pay-per-view. Shoves Cole. Then The Rock arrives. Which takes us into the Acolytes on Heat, where we found out they were going to face Kane next, back to the tag titles. I guess it's the rematch. It's a pretty decent
Yeah, but
match.
Austin in that promo again, and I'm sorry that I keep harping on this, but like it really pisses me off in this episode. Like if you made China number one contender, right? And like Steve Austin's talking about, it might take me like 20, it might take me 40 minutes to beat Triple H, but I'm going to beat him. And he's like, it might take me 5 minutes or it might take me 15 seconds to beat China. And I'm like, what? Why? Like, why did you need to say that? What is the purpose of that? I don't understand.
I think from his perspective, because she's not a wrestler, and everybody kind of knows that, I think that if he's not willing to have a match with Billy Gunn and Jeff Jarrett, then, you know, he was going to get some line out of this. The problem was
I wish that they would make that the story and not, oh, she's a woman, I can totally beat her.
Well, yeah, so Austin cuts that promo, and then we have this tag title match with Kane next, pack defending against the Acolytes. Pretty good match. And in the end, Farouk ends up eating a big boot. He gets pummeled at the corner. Bronco Buster time by X-Pac. Kane chokeslams Bradshaw. Match is over. But then the Acolytes still go after Kane X-Pac after the match. What did you make of the match? And I'm guessing you were very glad that Kane X-Pac kept the titles here.
I was so glad that they kept the titles. So, so, so glad. It was very cathartic to see X-Pac like kick the shit out of Farouk at one point on the outside. I really enjoyed that because, you know, love X-Pac. Yeah, like I basically was on edge because I didn't know who was going to win this match, and it made me very nervous. So I was super, super happy that Kane and X-Pac retained, because friendship prevails and they are the best.
They are great. Bob Holly, or Sir Hardcore Holly, is yelling at someone in the back. And then we get a really cool moment. We see the British Bulldog is coming back to the World Wrestling Federation. We see clips of a sit-down interview with Davey Boy and Diana, which is never shown at any point on TV. This was a point where there was this whole kind of yucky thing about Owen Hart had died, and they wanted to make sure they had people on side, and then like Davey Boy in the interview. I mean, they hired Davey Boy back, like I think they would anyway. But like, I think in the sit down interview, we're led to believe that Davey Boy and Diana are quite pro WWF in it.
Oh, really?
So it never aired, thankfully, because it just would have been a really bad move to air that.
So, like, what was this for, a television program?
No, so it was going to be shown on, like, a Raw or something.
Oh, okay, so it wasn't something that was for another show.
No, but then they ended up just kind of, like, deciding not to air it, because especially because of the lawsuit stuff going on.
Yeah.
And all that, so it was for the best, for
sure. I'm glad they didn't air it then.
Then we have Hardcore Holly coming out. He says that, you know, with everything that's been going on, with Big Show, etc., he has another super heavyweight he's going to bring to the World Wrestling Federation. It is Crash Holly. Crash Holly comes out. He then picks a fight with Hardcore Holly, and then they beat the shit out of each other. What were your thoughts on the debut of Crash?
I love him. I love him so much. I love that he's another super heavyweight. I love that he is shorter than Bob Holly. I don't understand why Crash's tights say Hardcore Holly on them, when his name is not Hardcore, his name is Crash.
I think the reasoning behind that is because this was obviously a last-minute decision that Hardcore Holly felt that his cousin was ready. And obviously they don't have, you know, it's 1999, it takes a long time to get gear ordered and all that. So he would have been like, here's a pair of tights with Hardcore Holly on it, have that for now, and then we'll send away and get you Crash Holly ones.
Which is fine. It's interesting to me that Hardcore Holly has two like identical sets of trunks, but no, this I did not expect, like, because I've been kind of waiting for Crash Holly to debut because I knew that he was a thing. I didn't expect him to just fight Hardcore Holly right off the bat. It was like, it was such a cousin spat, like it felt like, you know, when all of your cousins get together and y'all just want to beat each other up because it's a family gathering and that's what happens. The Holly household must be very interesting. This was a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I love the Big Shot Hardcore Holly. I love Crash thinking that he's another super heavyweight. It's great. I think it's fantastic.
They're such a fun part of the show. Then we had an interview with Mankind where he was talking about how he doesn't want to beat up China, but he is going to stick a sock in her mouth, and she needs to bring her ovaries. He's going to bring his little guys. I know Mick Foley said in an interview before that he like came up with saying little guys because he didn't want to say balls.
Yeah.
Which is the most Mick Foley thing ever.
That is the most Mick Foley thing ever.
So we get Mankind versus China, Triple H to held back by refs. Mankind is sort of going after China. China wails on him. Triple H is trying to fight free to make his way down to the ring.
There are so many refs. Like, how can they not keep Triple H away?
Referees are very incompetent. Also, they are. Shouldn't they hire referees that are a little bit more physically imposing that they can hold back professional wrestlers?
You would think so if their other job is security.
It's like if you go to a club and there's a bouncer. Like, they are deliberately supposed to be able to deal with
Bounce you.
Yeah. So, anyway. China's obviously getting very distracted by everything. She's yelling at Triple H. And then Mr. Socko's out. She's right into it. It's over. Mankind is now the number one contender. Triple H and Mankind start fighting. China's helping Triple H out. Shawn Michaels in the ring. He has a mic. He announces Mankind is the winner. This brings out Shane McMahon, who is now saying that, you know, he wasn't going to get involved, but, you know, now that this has happened, he's going to have a match with Mankind, Triple H in the main event. He'll be the referee. Shawn says, that's fine, but it'll be a no-holds-barred falls count anywhere match, and I'll be the second referee. You know things are going somewhere when there's two guest referees.
Two guest referees and dueling authority figures.
Sandra's nightmare.
I don't like it.
Any thoughts on Mankind here? Or China or Triple H?
Mankind's fine. Mankind beating China. Like, again, I'm annoyed about, like, the treatment of China on this episode. So it leaves a bit of a sour taste in my mouth. But, like, Mankind being number one contender doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, because I don't really want to see Mankind versus Stone Cold Steve Austin, because, like, you don't want Austin to lose the championship, but Mankind's such a good dude. I guess in reality, none of this makes any sense anyway, since Triple H should just be the number one contender because he did win a number one contendership match, so he's not wrong when he says that he should have claim to the title.
I will be able to explain to you soon why all this is happening. I just can't right now.
Okay. Because it's all very convoluted, right? I do not like that Shane McMahon came out.
There is a reason why all this is happening. It's a behind-the-scenes thing, but I will tell you as soon as I can.
Okay, I am intrigued by what this could possibly be, because holy moly, is there just a lot going on. Shane McMahon coming out was very annoying to me. I know it's supposed to be annoying, but, like, if Commissioner Shawn Michaels is the commissioner who makes the matches and he's actually there, I don't understand why Shane McMahon has the power to be like, by the way, I'm changing this, and Shawn Michaels is just like, okay, cool. Like, why wouldn't Shawn Michaels want his decision to stand? This is where we just, like, get into the murky water of dueling authority figures not being for me. Like, this didn't feel like a check and balance. This just felt like Shane McMahon being petty, and I'm not here for it. So, yeah. And then, like, two special guest referees in the main event. And at this point, Mr. Sandra actually went like, ugh, why is there going to be another number one contenders match? This makes no sense. And I was like, 1999? Question mark? Yeah, it's almost one shenanigan too many for me on this program. But it wasn't boring.
It was not boring. Whereas for me, it did feel it checks and balances for me, because Shane being the heel that was basically with Triple H has, like, you know, not been around, but now that, like, Mankind's the number one contender and it's not Triple H or China, he's like, well, now I'm getting involved.
But, like, org chart-wise, does he even have the power to make those matches? Like, I thought Commissioner Shawn Michaels had that power. Because he's supposed to have power over all the matches except ones involving Stone Cold Steve Austin. So why can Shane McMahon even do this?
Well, I think because Shane and Triple H are co-owners. Shane and Vince are co-owners. So Shane's still allowed,
right.
Shane's still allowed to make matches, but so is Shawn Michaels. So they're both allowed to do it.
Now, I would need to see a contract.
I mean, I can't provide that, but that's fine. So we have we see the Hollies are both brawling with each other on top of a semi-truck. One is suplexed on top of it, and the fight continues.
I just love them.
They are the best. Mr. Ass is holding his ass as he walks in the back. Triple H and Shane are conferring backstage. Brings us to Billy Gunn. Mr. Ass comes out. He's calling The Rock names. The Rock comes out and calls him a chicken shit. Rock brags about himself, talks about he's going to lay the smackdown on him. Then Rock brings out this young lady. She looks familiar to Mr. Ass, and she was the girl who was massaging his ass last week. But it turned out that the Rock had got her to put the People's Poison Ivy on to his ass, and that's why he now has an itchy arse. Then Rock tells the woman to beat it, and then the Rock tells Mr. Ass that he's going to stick some lotion up his ass, and then Billy Gunn comes down, they start fighting. But then Mr. Ass has a kendo stick, he beats the Rock with it, rolls him back in the ring, smacks him in the head with the kendo stick, mocks the Rock and puts his head next to his ass. Rock is then in an interview with Michael Cole backstage, said he's fine, he's going to beat Billy Gunn at the pay-per-view. I love that here, Billy Gunn with a kendo stick gets to completely lay out the Rock, and I still don't believe he has a chance.
The story is so atrocious. Like, the lady did a decent job of, like, I don't know, looking happy to be involved in the story. This is so dumb. Like, I'm supposed to want to watch The Rock and Billy Gunn because The Rock put Poison Ivy on Billy Gunn's ass. Like, The Rock is a dick here, right? Like, aha, I made your ass itch, babyface Rock says. Why?
It's just,
like,
it's
why
just,
is any of this happening?
It's just, why?
And why is it happening to me?
Why are we watching this? Why is this The Rock's match at SummerSlam?
I just feel like this is that time where, like, Vince McMahon humor really comes through, where he thinks something is hilarious. Like, haha, pal, it's such good shit. Your ass is going to be itchy.
Pretty
and
much.
It's just not funny, like, at all. It's just dumb.
Like, you have The Rock, who is, what, one of the top three stars in the company? Mm-hmm. And last year, when he wasn't even anywhere near that, he was just a heel in the Nation of Domination. And he had that big ladder match with Triple H, right? People still talk about. And the year later, when he is a 10 times bigger star, he is in a mid-card match with Billy Gunn over
ass cream or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad. It's bad. And the thing is, like, the brawl at the end, like, seeing Billy Gunn lay the Rock out with a kendo stick, and then, like, he puts the Rock's face near his butt. Like, he doesn't take his pants down. They're like, he made the Rock kiss his ass. Oh, my gosh. The Billy Gunn made the Rock kiss his ass. Like, he didn't. Like, his head was just near his clothed arse.
I'm so glad that this is no longer going to be a story we have to talk about after Sunday.
An exercise in frustration.
So it's main event time. We have JR and Lawler in commentary. Austin comes down. He's going to be in commentary as well. We have the two referees. We have Mankind Triple H. We have China. So the match is pretty chaotic. It is not boring. And in the end, Triple H... Mankind's got Socko. Triple H turns into it, but he picks Mankind up and back suplexes him onto a steel chair. Both of them have their shoulders down, so they're both declared the winner. Arguing ensues. They're both yelling at the ring announcer as Shane keeps screeching Triple H won. Austin decks Shane. Mankind and Triple H are going at it in the ring. China's with Triple H again. I know you don't like this. I'll just say I thought the main event was fun and I liked the dynamic of it. My only issue is more I don't think you should go off the air on Raw without really being clear about what's happening at SummerSlam, given it's your, like, second biggest pay-per-view of the year.
Well, so, yeah, and if you're trying to sell it as a pay-per-view, like, I mean, are they trying to, like, hope that people tune into Heat to find out what's going on or something?
Well, yeah, because, like, I mean, even if they'd had Linda McMahon come out here, that would have made more sense, but, like, you go off there with this kind of confusion of what's happening. So, while the storyline did work for me and I enjoyed it and, you know, I love shenanigans, I just was like, we should have known at the end of the show what was happening. I mean, you could guess... because both of them were down, but, like, I don't know. I just didn't think the execution at the end was as good as... Well, I didn't enjoy that as much as I enjoyed the angle. What did you make of all of it?
Yeah, I mean, like, there were definitely shenanigans, and it was fun, and again, like, it was not boring. It annoyed me that China was just, like, helping Triple H now. Like, if I were China, I'd be like, hey, put me back in this fucking match. But, Like Shawn Michaels and Shane McMahon being the two referees and like being at odds with one another is just really not for me. Like, I'm so tired of the special guest referee trope. It can work like in certain circumstances, but I feel like it's used so often in 1998 and 1999 that like I'm just tired of authority figures making themselves referees. I like it better when it's like a wrestler in a storyline or something like that, and when it's used sparingly, and they have not been using it sparingly. Shawn Michaels isn't even wearing a referee shirt. He's wearing a Shawn Michaels Wrestling Academy shirt because you just can't be bothered to look like a referee, apparently. The shenanigans in the match were fun. The, you know, the double pin situation was clever. It was. As soon as Mankind came back on the show, I remembered that, like, I'd heard that there was a triple threat with Mankind, Steve Austin, and Triple H, and I was like, oh, okay, I'm guessing that's what we're building to. So, like, through the rest of the show, I was like, how are we going to get to that triple threat? And this is how we got there, and it's fine. But I agree with you. Like, I think that going off the air, there should have been... But didn't they say... Didn't the announcer say, like, per Commissioner Shawn Michaels and the owner of the World Wrestling Federation, Shane McMahon, both Triple H and Mankind will face Stone Cold Steve Austin at SummerSlam? I swear that was an announcement.
I think they did say it, but, like, it's... Yeah, because, well, because I always remember that, like, especially at the beginning of SummerSlam, the video package has Linda McMahon in a studio saying that she made the decision.
Maybe she had to confirm it, but, like, they did announce at the end of the show that was the plan, but I think it was still kind of like, but is that actually going to happen? I don't know.
I mean, the idea that I just watched it and that wasn't clear to me is troubling.
It is troubling. And I watched it a couple days ago, but I remember there being some sort of announcement like that. And I was just like, okay, this is what's happening. It's a triple threat. Yeah, I'm very, like, I'm curious about the backstage reasons for all of this because it's just, it's so convoluted, like, so convoluted. And again, not boring, but kind of frustrating from a storyline perspective. Like, it seems like so many hoops to jump through.
It is a lot of hoops. But yeah, I really enjoyed the whole, like, China story of those 2 weeks because she was involved. I mean...
I did too. I did not appreciate it being taken away from me.
I mean, the problem is this is kind of why we were led into the situation. I mean, China's pretty much, she's not a good wrestler, but she's, as a character, really good for about another year, which is good.
Yeah.
But I think the problem is that all of this does lead to where the problem becomes, which is that she thinks she, because you know why she left, right? She ended up leaving the WWF in 2001 because she wanted to be, like, in the main event scene with The Rock and stuff.
Uh-huh.
As a wrestler. And they were no.
That would not be a great plan.
Anyway, so where would your thumb be for this episode?
Like, it's middling to up. Like, again, like, I wasn't bored. I was frustrated by a lot of things on this show. But I think it's still a thumbs up for being, like, interesting the whole time. It was an easy watch.
Yeah, it's a thumbs up show for me as well, because you had the debut of Crash Holly, a Jericho Crash, and the best Undertaker promo of all time.
Yeah.
So many shenanigans with China and Hunter and all these people, and yeah,
it's just there were some things that were exercises and frustration, like the storyline stuff not making sense, and then Billy Gunn's arse.
Of course. Very, very quickly, there's been a few changes to the SummerSlam lineup. The hardcore title match with Alistair and Big Boss Man does get changed to a three-way with the Road Dogg, which is going to happen. What else was there? Steve Austin was supposed to present an award at the Teen Choice Awards, because he ended up winning the Favorite Wrestler Award. Other nominees were Goldberg, The Rock, and The Undertaker. And WWF sent Deborah to be the presenter along with Mini-Me from Austin Powers.
Interesting.
Davey Boy Smith signed his new contract on the 12th of August in Stamford. That's when they did the sit-down interview for TV with Jim Ross that was supposed to air the night after SummerSlam. Thank God it didn't. Here's what Meltzer said about the interview. This apparently is designed to turn into a very controversial segment because it's supposed to be something of a shoot interview. The idea appears that he'll do about a month worth of clips on Raw and start in the ring around October. Publicly, up to this point, Smith has not really criticised the remainder of his family, but has somewhat stared at the situation. But there is a family rift over it, and privately things aren't nearly as smooth as hinted at in one of Bret Hart's columns. Reports are that Smith looks like Scott Steiner, 250 and ripped, which is amazing in a lot of levels. I saw a photo of him this week in a Japanese magazine, and he looked huge. He's saying his knees are 100% for the first time in a long time. His back isn't 100%, but he's saying it's good enough to get by.
I was going to say, his back's still fucked at this point, isn't it?
He is lying. The plan for Jericho is for him to continue to interrupt interviews with different stars. This week, Mick Foley filmed an episode of Boy Meets World.
Oh, that episode of Boy Meets World, I remember that.
Shawn Michaels will be working 3 days a week as a TV sportscaster for KENS TV in San Antonio, covering high school sports.
Cool.
UPN is spending $4 million to promote SmackDown. They're going with the idea that the show is going to have to save a network that's pretty much dying at this point. It's going to be the top priority for UPN. The last thing was for Jesse Ventura at the press conference. He was asked if he thinks Minnesota should have similar regulations of wrestling as Oregon. Oregon has these weird regulations where there's a lot of checks and things they need to go through, so WWF just doesn't go there. Ventura said he thought drug testing was unconstitutional.
Interesting.
He said that he's not an advocate of drug testing unless there is probable cause. And then Meltzer goes on to say, this is the same person who told me specifically in 1993 that 90% of the wrestlers who are making money are using steroids.
Of course.
Jesse the Body Ventura. But yeah, that's pretty much it for us. We will be back on Patreon with the SummerSlam review. Sondra, thank you for all your hard work and dedication.
Thank you for all your hard work and dedication as well, Kenny.
Thank you. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for bonus interviews. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes for pay-per-view reviews, retro pay-per-view reviews. Soon to be the retro double super bumper show thing. Doesn't have a name yet. And Sondra Ruth, RW, KennyMC1985 on Twitter. So thanks for listening, everybody. We hope you enjoy your week. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
One, two, is this on? Yo, Jimmy, hit me with that Triple H. Yeah, you let the music keep playing, Mr. Thunder. Yo, tell me who the time it is now.